Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to The Parenthood. Last year, nearly 107,000 marriages ended in divorce, with half of those in the first 10 years. Does this suggest that the shock of parenthood is to blame? I spend my days teaching antenatal classes. The expectant mums in the bump class expect us to talk about labour, caring for their babies, and how to breastfeed. But what they don't expect is marriage guidance. I'm adamant that the greatest gift you can give your baby is to take the time and energy to nurture your marriage or relationship. While having a child is certainly a good reason to stay together with your spouse, your child will not be the glue that actually holds your relationship together. But as many of you know, this is easier said than done. So I'm delighted that today I'm joined by a couple therapist, Jo Harrison, who sees the struggles that couples go through on a daily basis. Thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me. Yes, I think you're absolutely right that that is the greatest gift that you can give your children. And we know from research that, you know, looking after your couple relationship has outcomes, good outcomes for children across their lifespans. So, you know, that's where I work. I work at Tavistock Relationships, where I work in the general counselling service. And we, you know, we really believe that working with the couples helps the family. And I also work at Family Law and Partnership, which is a divorce law firm, where I, you know, I'm seeing it on the other side. I'm seeing the couples whose relationships haven't worked, but we're, you know, working with them to support them through their divorce and think about how they're going to co-parent together and how they're going to.
Because these, I mean, having problems in your marriage or your relationship, whether or not you're married, I just want to say for clarification purposes, we're sort of talking about the relationship between parents as opposed to whether or not you're married.
Yeah,
but it's really common, I think, especially when you have children, to suddenly hit a stumbling block in your relationship.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that having children is always the cause of relationship breakdown, but it adds to the pressure and it's often a big piece. And it's, you know, I see in my work at Tavistock Relationships, I see so many couples who are coming in at this stage of life, finding that the pressures of parenthood are just sort of tipping them over, really, and exposing the difficulties that they've had that may have been manageable, but actually then putting that pressure on that means that they feel that they have to seek help, that they are getting stuck with arguments and that they really need someone to help them with that.
I mean, and if you think about, I mean, we're both parents ourselves, and I think as a parent you understand that life becomes tough when you have a baby. I mean, it's really rewarding at the same time. You've never experienced love like it, but every day is difficult, and I think people never anticipate that in spite of what they're told.
No, and they can't anticipate it, and they, you know, I think it is the hardest, one of the hardest things that happens to us all. And
possibly even more so nowadays, because we're actually much more isolated within communities.
Yeah, well, I think there's that. You know, I see a lot of couples who, you know, one of the reasons that they're struggling is that they're not, you know, they're alone. They're in, you know, I work in London. They're alone in London. Their families often aren't even in the same country as them. And they're feeling alone with it. And it throws up a lot. You know, you can't anticipate it because you can't know what's going to get stirred up. You know, one of the things that happens when you have a child is that you sort of remember what it was like to be a child yourself in a different kind of way. And you know, it can stir up old things, old unresolved feelings, you know, and you can become, it can be quite an emotional, you know, and that's alongside the fact that you're absolutely exhausted, that you've, you know, that you don't have any time anymore, and that
you're riddled with hormones as well.
Yeah, and also that your life is in a huge phase of adjustment. You know, something is going to change in your daily life. You know, however you do it, and people are doing it all different ways, and whatever works, frankly. But someone's sort of daily life, or perhaps both of you, you know, the roles are changing, and that's a huge thing to have to cope with. And I think takes years. You know, I think this children business is a work in progress.
Because you kind of think, you have one child and you think, oh my God, this is a shock. And then very often 2 years later, you've got another one. So you're adjusting to sort of, and it's more than double having your second child and subsequent children. I think the adjustment is a really good way of describing it. It's a shock.
It's a real shock. And you don't know which bit of you it's going to shock in a way. You know, there is a shock factor and you can't predict the bit that it's of you that it's going to get to, and so you're grappling with that whilst at the same time grappling with these huge and practical realities of daily life which take over.
Yeah, and realizing that you've got this other job that it's I mean, someone said to me, you know, do you think it's like having a full-time job? I'm like, what do you mean full-time job? It's like having two full-time jobs the whole time. And you know, usually as a couple, if you go to work, you go to work and then you come home and you have me time. And you can do things at your own pace, and you can have weekends that mean that you can spoil yourself and spend time together. And suddenly as a parent, that all changes. You know, you often come home from work at seven and there's a cranky mother and an even crankier baby, and you'd sort of thrust this screaming little ball of fury, and you think, well, actually I've had a full-on day at work. And I get that, that's really tough. Everyone's had a full-on day at work.
And I think that's true. And I think the only comforting thing I can say about that is that pretty much every couple that I work with, you know, presents some version of that moment where, you know, one person is feeling that they're struggling more with this that day. You know, one person feels, you may have had a hard day, but I've had a really, really hard day. And if you think about it, in a situation where, you know, a quite standard setup, where one person has carried on with their job and the other person has perhaps changed their job or reduced it, you know, that person is in a huge adjustment. Their life has changed more than the other person's, and they're, you know, they're still grappling with that and still working that out. I think those handover moments are really, really hard. And one of the things that I often do,
this is when you're handing over the baby,
know, well, yeah, the sort of hand, it's the threat, when the threshold gets crossed, when one person comes into the other person's zone, and when, you know, say it's the mum is absolutely on her knees and handing, saying, please can you just take over, let it, you know, regardless of knowing how her partner's day has been. And, you know, I want all couples to know that that's really normal. And actually, we spend a bit of time in therapy thinking about that, thinking about how, you know, how hard it is to get into the other person's shoes and at those moments. But when you have a little bit of space to do that, then that can ease some of those tensions.
That understanding.
Yeah.
I think at the heart of it is communication. You know, it strikes me that communicating is one of the most important things we as humans do. I mean, we do it on such a sophisticated level compared to every other animal. And sometimes, or often, when you have children, the communication, it sort of stops, or at least the communication that you're having is on a much smaller level than usual. And that's where problems begin. You know, you don't feel understood, you don't feel that the person you that love and have chosen to spend the rest of your life with is a part of your life.
I mean, there are real realities about how hard it is to sit down and have a chat, because by the time it's the end of the day, you're so exhausted and grumpy, particularly in those first years, that, you know, you don't want to have a chat. But it is, you know, keeping that communication is important, that, you know, every couple needs to know that it's okay to have arguments. In fact, an argument is a sign that, you know, something that needs attention is getting attention. But it's sort of how we recover from those. And one of the ways of recovering is to have moments to reflect on it, to process it, to be able to try and bear to listen to the other person, to give them a chance to feel that they're heard. And that's all well and good, but that is very difficult to do, you know, and sometimes you know, that's when that's a sign that you do need to get a professional help to help with that.
It's really reassuring actually to hear that arguments are a good thing to have, but it kind of makes sense. You know, having an argument is exhausting, and if you no longer care, then you wouldn't bother getting into the argument.
No, and it brings things, you know, it puts them on the agenda. You know, not talking about things, not putting them on the agenda is a bit disastrous, really, in my view. But, you know, it's not easy. And, you know, the thing about having children is that, you know, you make, before you have children, you know, you realise that you're two different people. But it might be manageable in a different way. When you have a child, suddenly those differences are key, whether they're, you know, from the minute someone's pregnant in the relationship, there's a key difference. But you realise that you start to feel very differently about things. You might have different ideas about parenting that relate to your own upbringing. And suddenly you kind of passionately feel differently about things. And also you don't necessarily have time, you know, you might feel differently about, you know, what to do when the baby's crying. But you've got to make a decision. You haven't got the luxury of a weekend to resolve this one. You've got to decide
it. Yeah, or let's think about it next week.
Urgently.
Exactly.
And the other thing to say about this, in the classic, you know, the couples that come in say, we're arguing about everything. It's got to the point where, you know, who does the washing up, or, you know, who slept longer? You know, the little things in life, we're arguing about those. We're not even arguing about the big things anymore. But the point is, those little things represent the fact that communication has broken down. Mm. That when everything spills into who's loaded the dishwasher,
Saying everyone has the dishwasher argument at some stage.
Yeah, everyone has an argument about the dishwasher at some point.
It's symptomatic.
It spills over into everything. Who's going to do the nappy? You know, that can evoke such strong feelings about power within the relationship, who's doing what role.
Respect.
Yeah, resentment that the other person is having an easier time. I mean, parents can feel very competitive about parents are very good at sniffing out who's getting a better deal here.
Mm-hmm.
That's something about... Well, how difficult it is at this time in life when you're longing to be cared for, really.
Yeah.
And actually all you're doing is caring.
Yeah.
And it's very difficult to feel generous to the other person.
Yeah. It sort of like feels a bit like you're on the front line and life is really tough.
Yeah. It's survival mode, actually.
And obviously, I mean, you mentioned that arguing on the one hand is a good sign that you sort of care enough, but it does also have a sort of a lot of arguing, especially presumably when it gets to the stage that you were just talking about, where it literally creeps into every aspect of life and you're arguing about everything.
Yeah, I think, you know, and that's a good time to get help. And people come and say, you know, we're stuck, actually. We realise we're having the same argument again and again and again.
And even if it's just for the sake of the children, because I think a lot of people think, oh, we've only got a baby. They're unaware of what we're talking about. But they do. It does impact them. The sort of the vibe impacts them, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. They've shown that, you know, babies' heartbeats go up when they're asleep and their parents are arguing.
Room.
You know, that couple conflict has huge impacts on children. And people say, well, we argue when they go to bed. And actually, it's really hard. You know, when are you supposed to argue? When are you supposed to resolve these things? Well, you're sitting down together fine and you've got to deal with something difficult. You know, there's a reality to that. But, you know, we have to bear that in mind. I mean, you know, there's something, you know, children need to learn that their parents can disagree and then resolve, and that's modelling something great for them. You know, that's what you want to aim for in a way.
But you obviously can't get into the sort of passionate. But I mean, I would love to say that all my arguments have been resolved in a sort of grown up and efficient way. But I think I just don't think anyone can hold their hand up and go, that was me. You say things you regret, and I think, you know, if I had sort of every argument I'd had was sort of public, I'd feel pretty embarrassed about some of the things I'd said. Because passionately we say things that we regret.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Things don't necessarily get resolved in the argument. It's the sort of sitting down after, deconstructing. I think there's something at this phase of life which can feel so tough about trying to be compassionate to yourselves, trying to understand that you are under a huge amount of pressure, and that actually, okay, yeah, we really lost it there. You know, we've had a really difficult, you know, weekend. Sometimes the weekends are the hardest with children. Can we just think about what that was all about? And, you know, and
And sometimes I find that if you have an argument, you sort of just need to go away from each other and then maybe talk about it when you've all calmed down. I definitely find that with my children, actually, that if we have a sort of disagreement, I can't reason with them in the heat of the moment. We almost need to revisit that when everyone's a bit calmer. And that's when we have a much more productive conversation about why we all got so het up about whatever it was that we got het up about.
And you know, this goes back to who we are and what we've grown up with, that everyone has got their different, has grown up in a different family context of how conflict gets dealt with. And that may be a shock to find out that your partner has a very different take on conflict resolution to you, or, you know, finds it harder to speak about things, or, you know, one, and, you know, that's, and that's some of the things that that we help with, really, is helping people think about where they're coming from, what's different. You know, everyone's got their different style, and that's part of the work in progress, is kind of understanding how you operate, what works best.
And I think that brings us on nicely in terms of what you can do, because I mean, what I don't want to sort of scare people who haven't yet had children and might be listening to this, because, you know, it is a wonderful time, but, you know, I think to be prepared that, you know, the marriage or the relationship that you've had might struggle. But I also think that, you know, we're lucky that we're living in a world in which, A, we're having this conversation, because, you know what, 100 years ago, people didn't have this conversation. Even 15 years ago, there wasn't as much conversation around this topic. But also that there are now, you know, people like you who are there to help people navigate this, you know, these lumps and bumps and turbulence in their relationship. So what in terms of suggestion, I mean, you're obviously a couple therapist. So couple therapy is obviously one thing that people can do.
And that, you know, I think that can take different forms. I think sometimes, you know, people imagine that that's just too impossible for them to work out. But actually going and seeking help, going and having a consultation just to think about where they're at, you know, can be really helpful. And it's also, you know, parents do a lot of looking after. It's hard for them to look after themselves at this time. I think, you know, getting some help from a professional is a way of looking after them. It's a way of giving them a safe space of maybe bringing up things that just feel too difficult to bring up at home, or too tense, or, you know, but, you know, it doesn't have to mean years and years of couple therapy. You know, I think it's a step at a time to see what's needed, to check in, see, is this normal? You know, and actually they might find that this is very normal.
And is couple therapy always done as a couple, or do some people come individually?
Some people come individually, and we still focus on the couple and, you know, think about what's going on for the couple. You know, whatever works, really.
And I mean, I think the idea of seeking kind of emotional health therapy, certainly, I mean, the British are probably a step behind the Americans, who've kind of embraced this as part of sort of daily life. There is a bit of a stigma, I think, about kind of reaching out for help.
But I think that's changing. You know, I think we've got much more of a language about that. And, you know, I think it's becoming much more normal. And it is, you know, we now know that treating a couple where one of them's got depression, if you treat them as a couple, that's got the leading recovery rate of all treatments in NHS, improving access to psychological therapy services. You know, that, you know, something is working here. You know, lots of people are coming. Lots of people are more aware of how depressed they are or how difficult they're finding things. You know, they shouldn't be afraid to come and get some help. And
I mean, it makes sense.
It can be discreet and private. You know, if they don't need to tell everyone about it, you know, it can be a nice thing for them. It isn't painful. Well, it can be painful, but, you know, it can be their private safe space.
Well, because I think a lot of people, if they're struggling in their relationship, you know, if you're struggling with something, you kind of need to talk about it with someone.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of people feel a bit uncomfortable talking about their intimate relationship with friends of theirs. They almost feel like, you know, they're letting their husband or their partner down, or their wife.
Yeah.
So actually talking to someone who is discreet,
yeah,
impartial,
yeah,
you know, and also essentially whose time is yours, rather than thinking, I'm so sweet to your friend, I've just been moaning and moaning and moaning about me all, you know, all the time we've been together, and sort of slightly feeling guilty that you've been indulgent. I think that in itself is actually a really helpful and productive thing to experience.
Absolutely. And also, you know, that relationship is a very different one from a friend or family member. You know, couples can get into a situation where, you know, they're really blaming the other person, that the other person is the cause of all their woes. And actually, you know, usually it's both people, but it's quite difficult for a friend to point out, unless it's a very good friend, to point out, you know, where that person is going wrong. And it's a much safer way of doing it. You know, I think people feel anxious about couple therapy, that the therapist is going to take sides. You know, absolutely not. Our focus is on the couple. We're trying to think about the dynamic between two people and to work out where they're both, you know, where they're both going wrong in a way, or, you know, how they're both contributing to their difficulties. And to reflect on that. And that can really take some of the heat out of it.
Because it's, you know, I know that when you're in a situation where you feel that you're in the right and your partner's in the wrong, your partner can tell you that they're in the right or you're in the wrong until they're blue in the face. But you sort of don't believe them because you're arguing. Whereas if an impartial person said, oh, no, Maureen, let's rethink this, you know, then you're much more likely to listen and take on board what they're saying.
Yeah. And you can also, you know, in that space with a therapist, you can also perhaps start to understand why your partner is doing that. You know, actually, some of the annoying things about your partner, well, maybe you can start to understand it, thinking about, you know, what they've grown up with, or, you know, what their experience has been in relationships, and start a little bit of understanding and compassion. And, you know, the couple can, that sort of takes the heat out of it in another way, this sort of this understanding, you know, what's going on, rather than blindly having the same arguments again and again and
also
again.
Presumably, you know, responding in a different way that might be more productive rather than it flaring up into a big sort of shouting match, but actually approaching the response differently.
Well, and once you become aware of what you're doing and more, you know, more self-aware about it, then it's much easier to have a control about it.
And do you find that people that come to see you, do you sort of send them away with, okay, next time this happens, I want you to think about it in this way? And do they then feed back how that worked for them? Or how does it work? Do you give them homework? How does it work?
We can take situations and look at them very closely, and then, you know, maybe come back and think about it the next week, or reflect on it, or the next time it happens. I mean, there's no sort of standard way of doing it, because every couple is different, and actually we, you know, they come, they arrive, they bring what they bring that week, and we all think about it together. You know, it's a very active thinking together, trying to understand together, trying to reflect on things. And actually it's that, I think, that makes the real difference, is the sort of bringing things into awareness. And I think it's not about me imposing homework on them. It's about the couple working together.
And do you find that sometimes one part of the couple is really keen to listen to you and take on board what you're saying, and the other one is maybe a bit less into it?
Yeah. And that, you know, that can happen. And or that, you know, that person may not want to come, but, you know, often someone is skeptical at the beginning and then actually settles into it. You know, there are lots of sort of ideas, there are lots of different portrayals of what happens in therapy on the TV or wherever, and actually, you know, settling into something helps to dispel some of that, and people can start to feel more comfortable. And, you know, and if it's improving things at home, And kind of also, just especially this phase of life we're talking to, I think there's such relief to know that they're not the only people dealing with this. You know, kind of the proof is in the pudding, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you ever see a couple and think, they've got no chance? And then is it more then about navigating what happens thereafter? I mean, do you ever say to people, actually, you know, I think you kind of need to stop living together?
No, you know, I think that, you know, I think couples get to that point for themselves, you know, the work we do kind of either brings them to that or not. And obviously I'm working with my divorcing clients who have made that decision, and supporting them through that. You know, I think this is not that therapy is about empowering people to make their own decisions about the really important things in their life, their family and their relationships. But yeah, you know, sometimes actually people do go to therapy. I mean, sometimes people leave it very late to seek help.
What, so that their essentially their relationship has broken down to such an extent that it is really difficult to bring it back?
Yeah, it's really difficult, you know, that something has shifted. And actually often those people say, you know, we probably should have come a year ago.
Yeah, and which I think is a really interesting point, you know, because I think a lot of people, one of the first things they'll do if they're struggling in their marriage is to listen to something like a podcast where it's discreet and it's private and no one's judging them and they're not paying lots of money. Yeah. And then deciding whether or not they need to escalate their help to maybe going to see a couple counsellor.
You know, and I think, you know, there's a reality to it and it's difficult and it's often, you know, when the kids have gone to school for the first time that finally there's a moment to sort of get your head above a parapet and think, okay, now we need to get some help. But actually it may have been that if they'd come previously, it wouldn't be at the point that it's got to, you know, and that's sad.
Yeah. And also, you know, fighting, I find emotionally exhausting and painful. Mm. And actually if you can avoid any unnecessary conflict by I mean, I suppose it's a bit like, you know, if you've got a sore knee, you're probably going best to go and see a physio sooner rather than later before you sort of continue running and doing sort of more and more and more damage.
And you know, people, you know, when you have young children around, you end up, you know, you get them, you take them to the doctor and you do all the things for them and you all the care goes into them, you know,
including mental health things. If you're worried about your child emotionally, you'll be the first person to say,
fitting in all the things for yourself, whether it's the dentist, the doctor or the couple therapist, is hard. You know, you've got to get food on the table, deal with the kids. You know, these things kind of, they fall down the list. Every sort of new parents have got a list of things that they need to do that aren't being done. And it can feel daunting, but, you know, I think it's a really good investment for them and for their children.
And
even if it's a one-off, you know, even if it's a one-off chat.
And it's not, you know, preemptively, we, you know, most of us go and see the dentist or the hygienist or, you know, we sort of think, okay, well, let's not wait till our health is broken before we fix it. It actually makes sense that we sort of apply the same thinking to our emotional state of mind. And,
but that, you know, I think it's hard. I think it's hard to own up to the idea that your relationship is in trouble. You don't want to be that person. You don't want to
but
be...
But aren't we all that person?
Yeah,
I think every couple, every relationship has,
you know,
troubled times.
You know, there's a hope. You know, there are lots of hopes that go along with having kids. And this is, you know, you want to either correct the things in your own past or repeat some of the lovely things that you... And you know, it's pretty galling to have to kind of think, oh, God, this isn't working. And it feels practically difficult. You know, with a little baby, you know, the baby can probably come along. You know, that's not ideal in the long term because you actually want that space for yourselves. But, you know, I think if there's any contemplation of it, you know, go for it. Have a go. Dip a toe in.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
You also learn a lot about yourself as a person and, you know, the behaviour as sort of humans. I think given that time for reflection, I mean, I had grief counselling after my son was stillborn, and I felt that that definitely opened the door to sort of understanding the wealth of human emotions. And by being open to the idea of having some kind of therapy, you know, I'd never had therapy before, and I thought, you know, how much can this actually work? I do feel that I'm a more compassionate person. I feel I'm a better mother. I feel I'm better equipped to support my children emotionally. And, you know, when they, and this is just the beginning, they were 3 and 4 when it happened, but, you know, as they get older and they get more hormonal and life becomes more complicated, their emotional issues that I hope to support them through are going to get more difficult to deal with. And I feel that having sought professional help for me, it's put me in a stronger position to deal with them. So, you know, I struggle to kind of get any negative to having been open to the idea of having therapy.
Yeah. Well, I just think, you know, I think it's great that you're speaking this way and that you're so open about it. You know, I'm so sorry about your losses. And but I think that's right. And I think it's very brave to say it. And I think that, you know, as parents, actually, children amazingly and brilliantly know exactly which buttons to press in us. They can just sort of sniff our weak points. And actually, if we can just be a little bit aware of them, a little bit ahead, we are better equipped to deal with parenting. As you say, you know, you've said it, I think that... you know, and it's looking after yourself to be able to look after them.
Yeah, it's so interesting, that idea that, you know, my children wind me up in the way no one else in the world
absolutely.
Can.
Absolutely. Like, you know, I don't know how they do it, but they just know exactly where to. So, you know, being a centimetre ahead.
I've spoken obviously to lots of people who are having kind of relationship problems. I think because I've been open, and I wrote an article 3 or 4 years ago now about the idea of having a sort of relationship MOT, and how Ben and I have sought help in the past, and actually doing something on a sort of regular basis isn't a bad thing. And interestingly, it means that when people are struggling, they'll come to me, and it just shows me how many people are. Very often what they say is that it's the woman that comes to me and she says, my husband's really resistant, he doesn't want to go to therapy. What is there anything you can do that might make that sort of change in practice a little bit easier? Because very often it is the male partner that's a little bit less keen.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that can be the case, although I do, you know, I do think that it is getting easier now. I think there's more out there that's being spoken about more. You know, there's so much literature about it, you know, to read about, to kind of try and normalize it.
I mean, maybe even the idea of, you know, if one party's being resistant, maybe they find the counsellor that they don't feel that it's someone who's against it. I mean, you've already said that a counsellor's always going to be impartial. They'll never take sides.
They can have a look exactly, that they could be the one to find it, or, you know, they could just try it once, or, you know, there's a bottom line, isn't there? There's like, you know, I'm really desperate here.
Yeah.
I really, you know, this may not work, but I really need to get some help, and I'd really like you to be alongside me. There, you know, really give it a try.
Yeah.
And there's some, you know, there's that, you know, well, what are people prepared to do for their relationship? Maybe they do need to give it a try.
Yeah,
if they're feeling that stuck, and you know, is there anything worse than having the same row every day?
And you know, if people say, well, "What can therapy do?" I just don't see how it can help. You know, there are statistics that actually couples that do seek help.
Yeah,
I mean, even though it's not like, you know, having your appendix out that will cure your appendicitis. It's not as sort of straightforward as that. It definitely helps, and even if it. Even if you still end up splitting up, surely it means you've thought about that decision,
that you're in a better position to mourn the relationship, and you'll be in a better position to go on as parents. That you know that it will need to be processed. It's a life event.
Yeah, and that's, you know, there's the other thing that, you know, I was listening to something on the radio recently, and they were saying how, you know, in the old days, two generations ago, they used to think that without doubt, the best place in which children to grow, you know, which children should grow up, was a sort of nuclear family where parents were married and the siblings were related to each other. And now, obviously, you know, people do things in slightly different ways. And I think what the professionals have realized is that that's not the only right way to do things. There are loads of environments in which children thrive that don't necessarily have the same parameters. But what they realize is that the heart of it all is the quality of that relationship. So whether or not you are living together or not living together, married or divorced, same sex, different sex, you know, single parent, there are all these different situations in which, you know, children really can thrive, but it's about that relationship. And so, you know, even if you end up going to therapy and you still end up splitting up, as long as you can enrich the relationship that you do have, you've kind of done it all.
Absolutely. And then you know, and you think about what you're modeling to your children, what you want for them. Is that quality of relationship? Is that, you know, good communication and, you know, absence of conflict all the time? You know, that's an investment.
One of the things that we were talking about earlier that, you know, comes up a lot is that when struggles happen in a relationship, the intimacy goes, the sex, there's less sex. I mean, that always changes anyway when you have children. That is simply a fact of life and a physiological thing as much as anything else. Is that something that comes a lot up?
I think that's part of it. I mean, people may find it harder to bring up or don't know if it's appropriate to bring up. I mean, you know, it's definitely part of the mix of difficult things that life throws at you at this point. And again, you know, it's part of this good communication is being able to find a way to acknowledge it and think about it. You know, it's almost a topic for another podcast, but, you know, there are so many aspects. There's, you know, what was the, you know, giving birth, what does that mean? You know, not having any time, being really tired, you know, that the care is all going into the childcare, that actually doesn't feel, you know, you don't feel very generous or loving to each other, you know, all of these things. And it does take time, you know, that again, this is a sort of another work in progress. You're not going to get your sex life back just because the doctor's given you a thumbs up at the 6-week check, you know. It's going to be a while and it's going to be different and a different phase of your relationship in that way.
And presumably it's all part of that, you know, understanding of different needs and, you know, I'm not saying, you know, be forced to have sex if you really don't want to have sex, but just that sort of, well, it's intimacy, isn't it? And that communication, which often sort of is facilitated by sex.
Yeah. And you know, and you may need specific help with that, but, you know, that's up for discussion really as well. You know, that's all part of it. But if, you know, if you're angry with each other, fundamentally that will have an impact on your sex life. And going back to the dishwasher point, you know, more than once the man loads a dishwasher and they end up having sex. Just a hint.
Or the man mends the dishwasher. And I think before we go, really good just to maybe talk about tips for a healthy marriage. I want to say marriage, actually relationship. I think it should be much broader than that. What would you say is if you were sort of giving people tips, what they could do sort of early
on? I mean,
on?
I think we're talking about this particular phase of life. And I've obviously, you know, been talking about, you know, don't be afraid to seek help when you need it. I think that's a key tip. I think how can you look after it at this time of life? I think firstly, you know, acknowledge this is a work in progress, acknowledge this is a time you're going to have to survive it. Things are going to adjust over time. It's not, things aren't going to feel great or perfect immediately. You've got to sort of hang on in there. I think that, you know, thinking about yourself as a couple is key, not just thinking about yourself as a family. And obviously it's wonderful to become a family, and it's so, you know, we're talking about all the difficult aspects of parenting. There's a wonderful side of parenting, of family life, but it's how do you kind of preserve that couple space, that sort of couple state of mind all that time, you know. And that's what going out together is about. It's about representing yourself as a couple only and remembering who you are and how you got together. You know, this doesn't need to mean sort of leaving your 1-week old baby alone, you know, finding a way to go away for the night or whatever, you know, that may not be appropriate. Well, that isn't appropriate. You know, you've got to bond with your baby as well, and you've got to balance that. But actually, you know, in time, going to get a coffee together while the baby naps and granny looks after it is a start, actually, you know. And it's baby steps, it's, you know, or making sure that you put the baby to bed and you just have a meal together.
Yeah.
Or that you even, or that you find a really nourishing box set that you both love, that you can, you know, talk to each other about for 5 minutes after. So you've actually shared an experience. You know, I think there's something about being nourished from the outside as parents. You do so much nourishing emotionally, physically, actually, you know, if you could, you know, it's difficult actually to get to the cinema with little kids, but something that comes from the outside into you and gives you a bit of a feed is no bad thing at this time. I think another thing that is good for mental health at this time is hanging out with other people in pretty much the same stage as you, whether that's, you know, as a family, with, you know, other couples and their children, hearing how they're going through the same stuff as you, or, you know, mums or dads, you know, hanging out with other people in the same situation. They're going to have their different ways of talking about it, but there's something helpful, you know. It's sort of,
you can also have a laugh,
you can have
it.
A laugh, you're in the trenches together, you can just think, oh my god, we're all so tired, you know, what a nightmare this is, but thank god that we're all doing it together and we're all grappling with the same things. And everyone's, you know, there are challenges also to being alongside people, because you start realizing that people do things different ways, and then you know that. But equally, I think, you know, that's very healthy, not to isolate yourself. You know, having your support network around. I mean, you know, having family around is a great thing. It can also stir up some difficult things, and, you know, that's to be something to be aware of. And that's, again, something that, you know, maybe needs a bit of processing. And you know, that might surprise you that challenges come. And challenges come from, you know, grandparents, and having to manage those relationships, how, you know, whether your own parents or your partner's parents,
and
you know,
often a critiquing on your style of parenting.
Yeah, exactly, at a very difficult time. So, you know, it's sort of figuring out those boundaries within your own families and within your own extended family,
but also asking them for help, you know. I found, like, with the first baby, everyone was very keen to look after the baby for a couple of hours. By the time you've got two, those offers don't come that readily.
No,
but taking that time, I mean, I think you're right, that sort of sitting down and having dinner together and having a conversation, if that can be sort of factored in, that, like, once a week you just sit down and you cook a meal, and before you sit and watch TV, you just, even if it's just half an hour, but you actually find out about what's been going on. And
being kind, you know, there's a study that's come out recently about what makes relationships work, and I kept the Shackleton Project, and I kept you know, he keeps mentioning cups of tea. That's what people really like. And I thought, you know, it's not such a bad thing, making someone a cup of tea, saying thank you for it. You know, that can really change the tone of things.
Yeah, I've got to actually say, my husband, when he's around, he always makes me a cup of tea in the morning. Yeah. And I love it. And it starts that day with something that's really positive. And if you can start that day with gratefulness, that is going to slightly define your relationship for that day. I do think
exactly, it's a little bit in the back. And I think, you know, part of this, I think couples try and help each other out. They try and say, okay, you know, I'll give you a lie-in, or, you know, you go out with your friends and I'll stay with the babies. And I think that's great, and that can sometimes really work, but it can often, I quite often see that it gets into this thing of, you know, who's had more.
Yeah,
and actually, that it may be a bit of a step to have to find someone who can babysit. It may be an emotional step and a practical step. You know, it's hard, that, and I'm not advocating doing it before you feel ready to do it. But equally, it's a very different kind of time off when you're both having time off.
Yeah, you're right. I was asking around for sort of tips on sort of marriage, what people thought was sort of really useful. One person said, let your lover and your children know that the two of you come first, which is really interesting, because a lot of people feel that their children should come first. I've got to say, I slightly disagree with that. I think that they rely so much on you as a couple, but there's also going to be a stage where you kiss your children goodbye and they leave you, and they go out and find their own lovers and their own lives and their own children. And I think it's really important to let go. And that's much harder if you don't have an enriching relationship with your partner.
Yeah, and what kind of relationship do you want your children to grow up believing in?
Because they model their relationships on what they've seen by you.
Yeah, right, well, and extent? You know, a lot, yes, absolutely. You know, the couples that I see, you know, one of the key things that we're looking to understand is what their blueprint for a relationship is, what they saw their parents doing, how they've learned, what they, you know, that's kind of inside them, you know, whether they like it or not. And I think, you know, that's what you've got to think about for your own children.
Yeah. And someone else was saying that you rather than despair at each other's differences, sort of embracing them, because I think it does, as you mentioned earlier, it becomes really evident that you're very different people. And that can seem like a really difficult challenge. You know, he doesn't like to do things the way that I do. She doesn't want to do this. But actually, life would be really boring if you were the same people and you thought the same thing and you had the same opinions. You know, I think it's much, much more interesting that you are different people. And so rather than thinking, oh, God, yet another thing that we disagree on, sort of thinking, well, actually, this makes life a bit more interesting, and trying to sort of turn it so that it become a becomes a positive rather than
you know, I think that's right. I think that can be difficult to do, and you know, it's not just a kind of decision. That you know, sometimes that's going to take time to work out, and you're going to, you know, I think some of these years are about sort of working out, negotiating what are the differences you can tolerate. And what are the ones that you're going to have to sort of
work together?
Yeah, exactly. You know, and that can take some time, and that may need some help.
Yeah,
if that feels very. But you know, as you say, obviously that's the ideal, is that you can embrace the differences, and you know, and that's something for children. I think, you know, one of the key differences that comes up is different ideas about parenting. You know, what to do. And again, that's one of those decisions that maybe has to be made in a split second. What are we going to do about this? I think that, you know, that can emerge in the baby stage, that can emerge at different phases of, you know, how do we deal with discipline or things like that. And, you know, again, those things have got to be negotiated and worked out. And, you know, there's something to be said for children seeing having different experiences that gives them a different, you know, they can experience different things at home. They're going to have better capacity to deal with things outside. On the other hand, you know, you want sort of united front, but you know, these are things that parents need to communicate about, not easy things.
No.
You need to have a language for that.
Yeah. Yeah, well, my favourite tip which came from a friend who's got four children, said, understand that anything said over a screaming baby doesn't count, which I think is very, very true and very wise words. Sometimes you do need to forget things. Sometimes you need to forgive people and say, you said the wrong thing, but I will forgive you for it.
Yeah.
Because we all screw up sometimes.
Yeah, and particularly at this point in life when we're exhausted, you know. Things do get said, and that's part of the compassion to yourself and to the other person.
Yeah. I have a friend who, she had one of those baby monitors that recorded what was going on in the room, and she had a big fight with her husband that was all recorded. She said the biggest mistake was that we listened to it back, and we just heard how kind of, you know, reiterated that we'd said sort of the wrong things. Yeah. And she was like, you see, how could you? She said it was just the worst thing. It was like reliving the argument over and over again. Yeah.
But I think everyone's had that.
Yeah.
Everyone's got that.
And actually they were laughing about it. Which is probably a really good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. You've got, you know, if you can find a sense of humour about this time of life, then, you know, that's going to help.
And you will. You know, there are times that you just laugh and laugh because your children just make you laugh. But it is a phase, and I think that's really worth holding on to. Yeah. Everything in parenting is a phase.
Yeah, yeah. And just when you get to grips with it, then you're into the new one. But, you know, I think that's what I'm saying, is that you've got to have a way of dealing with it with each other. You've got to have a language. And that's one of the things, you know, is going back to this question of what if someone feels skeptical about therapy. You know, it's helping you to have a language with each other. It's helping you to have a richer way of dealing with things. It's helping you to be able to contemplate things and ponder things with different nuances and with different sort of, you know, with more empathy. You know, why not enrich your experience of family life in that way?
Yeah. Yeah, why not indeed? Well, Jo, thank you so much for coming along
thank
to talk
you for
to
having
me today. It's been really, really interesting. If people want to get in touch, Jo, where do you work? Where you're at?
So, yes, so they can look on the website, tavistockrelationships.org. Or yeah.
And that's quite a good resource if you are sort of struggling and want to maybe seek a bit of extra support, the Tavistock Relationships.
Yeah, absolutely. There's lots of information on the website there, all about different services. There's some online services or, you know, come in services. And yeah, and I'm also Family Law in Partnership.
Perfect. Well, thank you, Jo. And thank you, listeners, for downloading this episode of The Parenthood. Please don't forget to subscribe, rate and review us. And if you're enjoying the podcast, do tell your friends about us. But in the meantime, from us, goodbye.